to share with the island. A few thoughts that I had about Hanukkah, and a lot of these I've spoken about in the past, but I want to put them all together into one big picture. So let's start with normally level one, yeah, in the parsha share. We'll start straight from the Gemara, and I want to show you that there's a real idiosyncrasy when it comes to the halachas of hadlakas neiros, and you see it in at least two ways in the Gemara straight up, and one that I'll show you in the Rambam. Oh, Shalom. Yeah, it's getting crowded. Yeah, no, don't. We're supposed to shove the chomp into one, right? So, okay. So listen to this. So the Gemara on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis and Shabbos, right, in the Sugya of Chanukah, so it has a Mishnah, which is one of the very few places in Shas that Chanukah is actually mentioned, right? It's really not mentioned much at all. But in this Mishnah, in Baba Kama, it's speaking about damages, so a case comes up of Ner Chanukah. What's the case? So you have this guy, and he owns this store, and the store is right up where the shuk is. So you can imagine, in olden days, right, there was like the front area that he would sell things in, and the farther inside area where he would live in, stay in, or whatever he was accounting in. And the guy's coming through, the Rishus Harabim, with his Gamal, which of course is where the name Jamal comes from. That's just the Dagesh and the Gimel is Jamal, right? So we'll call him Jamal the Gamal. So, and he has an owner, so yeah, he's the Baal Jamal the Gamal. So the Baal Jamal the Gamal has his Gamal Jamal, and it's loaded with flax. So you can picture, we're talking wide load over here. It's hanging over, and he's going through the Rishus Harabim. So the Mishnah says, if the Chanvani, if the store owner, has a flame that's simply lighting up his store on the inside, and for whatever reason this load was so wide that it catches fire in the candle of the Chanvani, and then he keeps going, and the Jamal the Gamal ignites somewhere they're building on fire, so the Baal Jamal the Gamal is the one that's going to be chayav and not the Chanvani. Chanvani's going to be putter because he has a right to have a candle in his store. Like, what are you talking about? He's a wide load. It's not my fault. It's his fault. That's case number one. Case number two is, but if the Chanvani leaves his nair on the outside of the store, so that's already a negligence, because he should know people are going to come by, like Baal Jamal HaGamal, and it could catch on fire. So it's going to be the Chanvani's responsibility. The Mishnah finishes by saying, but there's an exception. The Rishus says, but not if it's a Ner Chanukah. So if it's outside, and it's Ner Chanukah, apparently he's mechuyev to put it there. That's the mitzvah. So he's doing what he's supposed to do, so he can't hold him responsible anymore. Now, Baal Jamal Gamal, so he's the one that's going to be chayav. It was a Ner Chanukah, right? That's just pasha. That's what the Mishnah says. Pretty, you know, more or less self-explanatory. Responsibility versus rights and all those things. What's interesting is Ravina wants to prove something from here. Ravina says, you see from here, that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is that it should be placed within 10 tefachim of the ground. How does he see that from the Mishnah? Why is the Chanvani going to be butter? Put it higher.
It's not above 10 tefachim.
In other words, how did it catch on fire? The Tzaretz is because it was in a place where it was easily cutting, easy to catch on fire for the camel. So he's butter because it's Ner Chanukah. Well, what do you mean? He should be chayiv, right? Because he couldn't put it higher. It's not Rosh Hashanah. They put Ner Chanukah in a place where it could catch fire.
It's not Rosh Hashanah then.
What do you mean?
Does it have to be Rosh Hashanah?
So this put is it up in a place where it's high enough, it won't catch fire. What's it? And listen, it's not 30 feet high. That's already no good. But 20 feet high is fine. 15 feet high, 10 feet is high, you know, 6 feet. How high does it have to be that it won't catch on fire? Somebody's passing through. So, Mamanachal, right? If you're mechuyev to put it in a place where it could catch fire, okay, so I understand. But if you're not mechuyev to do that, then the Chanvani should be chayev for being irresponsible. If it's not Hanukkah. Straightforward? But that's Ravina's Raya, that there's a mitzvah that it should be within 10 tefachim of the ground. Gemara rejects it. Gemara says, no, you have no proof. Now this is where it gets crazy. The Gemara says, because, well, I'll just say what it says. It says, the Gemara says, Dilma imitrichalei tuva, if we would trouble the Chanvanis so much, asilim nuemi mitzvah, they would come to stop themselves from not doing the mitzvah at all. Okay, what's the answer to the Gemara? In other words, if we hack him so much, nah, it's going to be like this, and he's going to figure out how to put it here and not there, and it's too close to the... forget about it, I'm not lighting. That kind of guy, for that kind of guy, I don't know how many people are like that, right? That's like a Schmendrick. For that type of guy, that scoundrel. So we are going to potter everyone for putting them in places where it could catch fire. For those people. That's idiosyncrasy number one that I wanted to point out to you. That's the Gemara's conclusion, not of a raya, because that's a reasonable conclusion to explain the Mishnah. That's crazy, right? That's crazy. Okay, that's number one. Number two, everyone's familiar with this concept of kavsa zakuk, kavsa ein zakuk, right? If you remember from these Gemaras, which most people learn a few times. So there's two issues. There's lighting Neiros during the weekday, weeknights, and lighting Neiros on Shabbos. And this is on the coattails of the Mishnayos Bamei Madlikin, which us in Mizrach Ashkenaz, we say every Friday night. So all of those Mishnayos are all about what wicks and oils you're not allowed to use on Shabbos. Why not leave them on Shabbos? Because we're afraid you're going to come to adjust the flames to make the fire better, and because they flicker, they're not good, they're very inferior. So you're going to come to adjust it, and that's going to be a chiyuv havara b'Shabbos, not just igniting a fire at Mechadash, but making the fire bigger is also a havara b'Deraisa. And therefore, we say you have to make sure you're using good wicks and oil. Halacha Maaseh, you're still not allowed to read by the Ner. That's a Gemara about the Rav. That did he actually tip it? Did he not actually tip it? So Halacha Maaseh, that happened once. But I remember we were by my in-laws many years ago when there was a power outages in Muncie, Mona. And so Baruch Hashem, I saw the Ner Shabbos. So technically, you're supposed to have a shomer when you're learning by the Ner Shabbos, so you don't come to adjust the flames. Even though nowadays, you know, we're using good wicks and oils, but we're afraid that to do something that's so precise, like reading. So then you need a shomer. Or Sir Chaim Kanievsky, right? Zichron Tzadik Livracha, in Bnei Brak, they have all this, they don't use electricity that's, unless it's from a generator, right? They don't use it from the government, right? Anyway.
So, like, you know, I think the same one. I think we moved into the kitchen, the whole family sat over there around.
Is it but the then tomato
you
have five
people, that's, that, you know.
So for a meal, that's really what it's for. But to learn, that's not. That then you need someone to watch you. So that's where Chaim Kanievsky you should have one of the kids, you know, one of the grandchildren or whatever, be a shomer. Not allowed to do anything else. I think for that, I don't adjust the flame. Anyway, that's when it comes to Shabbos. So that's how
the kid has to know what he's watching.
Just to make sure I don't do that, touch it. That's the gist. So so on the coattails of that, so the Gemara says, what about Chanukah? Bein b'Shabbos, bein b'chol. In other words, what about those inferior wicks and oils? Can you use them for Hanukkah? That's a kasha during the weekdays, and it's a kasha on Shabbos. So on Shabbos, the issue is whether or not you're allowed to use the Neiros Hanukkah light. See, if you hold you're allowed to use it, then you have a problem on Shabbos with inferior wicks and oils. If you hold you're not allowed to use it, so on Shabbos you shouldn't have a problem. Maybe during the week it's a different issue. Why? What's the different issue during the week? Kav tzuzakal, kav tzayin tzuzakal. If it goes out, are you mechuyev to relight it? If you have to relight, so let's say you don't have to relight. If it goes out, you lit, you're good, you're yotze. Okay, so then use inferior wicks and oils. What's wrong? It lasts for a couple seconds, and well, no big deal. Okay, what if you say kavs zakukla? You have to relight it. Oh, so you're not allowed to use inferior wicks and oils during the week. Why? Just relight it. So Rashi says, Dilma Pasha. Maybe the guy will be negligent. But let me sack in law, he won't fix it. We're afraid of a guy that's going to be so poshea that he's not going to forget about it. You hear how these are two of the same things, like flip sides of the same coin, right? Because the first issue was people that are going to be negligent and think, forget it, too much of a burden, I'm not interested, I'm not going to light my nerves conning up. And this guy is going to be like, it's too annoying, forget about it. So we make sure that everybody has to use better wicks and oils so that the losers don't. So that the losers fulfill the mitzvah. Everyone has to light with better wicks and oils, so the losers don't fail to fulfill the mitzvah. So you see what I'm getting out of here? There's an agenda in the Hanukkah that every single person should light, even people who a little tircha would turn them off. Number three, you see this again in the Rambam. The reason I'm quoting the Rambam for this and not a Gemara is because there isn't really a Gemara that says this. The Rambam says, Mitzvah ner Hanukkah mitzvah chaviva hi ad ma'oid. Right, an emotional statement by the Rambam, which is unusual. The mitzvah ner Chanukah is very precious. Ad ma'od. So who cares? Because that's nice. That's emotional. But what does that do with halacha? So Rambam says, "As enough gamina la halacha." V'tzarech adam lehizayir ba kedei lahidia hanes. You have to be very careful about it because it's a pirsume nisa. Lahoisich b'shevach hakel to add on to the praise of Hashem. Lahidia line to admit a kadosh baruch hu anisim shlas alanu on the miracles He did for us. Therefore, he doesn't say therefore, but he says, "Afilu ein ma'yoychal el min atzdaka." If a person gets all of his food, gets all of everything he has from tzedakah, he has no parnasa. Shoyal o'moychak shuso. He should borrow, or if he has to, sell his clothes. And use that money to purchase oil and candles, whatever, a container, and madlik and light. It's a pella. Because everybody points out that this halacha is a big extreme. Because when you have a mitzvah, asei daraisa, that's not the halacha. If a person finds out he's from, and he lives in the middle of nowhere in America or some foreign place, I'm Jewish, he finds out. Oh.
So he says, that was the Rambam?
Yeah, that's the Rambam.
The Rambam was a liberal.
Wait, what?
Wait, I'm on welfare. He doesn't say go out and get a job. He said,
"Well, because he doesn't have time to get a job." Hanukkah. If he had time to get a job, Rambam would tell him to get a job. He's coming. Whatever. Anyway, so he finds out about his mitzvah called Tfilin in the middle of nowhere. I says, "Great! I went very excited. It sounds like a great idea, Tfilin. How much do they cost?" He finds out. Whoa, $1,500 Yeah. I don't have that kind of money. Okay, well, if your mamish doesn't have the money, then he's butter. That's it. You know, he doesn't wear tefillin. You don't have to go selling your clothes to purchase tefillin. That's not the halacha. But near Hanukkah you do. Where did Rambam get this from? So that's not clear. The Kesef Mishnah claims he got it from the Gemara in Pesachim about Arba Kosos. Because Arba Kosos, you find this din, that an Ani has to have Arba Kosos. Now even there, okay, so the Ani has to have, so we have to supply the Ani with Arba Kosos. Who says the Ani has to sell something to get the Arba Kosos? But okay, but that's the tzushtel, that's the connection that the Magid Mishnah makes.
But I thought that not all this is, there's like only a certain percentage 20, that you're 20, required 20, to lose.
Yeah.
So, you can say Kala Homer, if you have no money, then for sure you shouldn't.
It's Rabbana. And it's the Rabbana. I mean, Tfilin's the rice, and you have to spend 20% of your available cash. And here, didn't there point on Arkana, but you have to sell your clothes? A pella. So that's what Magid Mishnah wants to say. No, because you see it by Pesach, by Arba Kosos, which is also Darabana. And what's Arba Kosos all about? Again, Pirsu Mei Nisa. It's all about the Nisim of Kadosh Baruch Hu, Arba Lashon Shel Geula, whatever. It's all about showing how we're free men and the Nisim. So that's what he claims the Rambam got it from. Be that as it may, again, we see this idea that in the Rambam, that here it's not a negligent person, here it's an Ani. That everybody has to perform near Hanukkah. It's so, so important. And here Rambam explains, because of Pirsumei Nisa. So we're a step closer. So I want to suggest to you that that's actually what's going on in the Gemara, is that it's the same ballpark, that Pirsumei Nisa was pushing Chazal to make sure that every single person is able to be Mekayim near Hanukkah, and we do whatever we can, which is not normal, to make sure that everybody can, or in the case of the Ani, and everybody should. I mean, obviously, if we can supply the Ani, shouldn't make him go sell.
Why is it not a chiv?
What?
Why is it not a chiv?
What do you mean?
For us to give Aniyim.
Oh, so I'm saying that would be better, right?
It was a chiv.
First, he's shoyel. First, he asks for somebody, you know. But if he can't, that's how far he has to go. But in a Hanami, it's our responsibility. We should definitely try to cover it. But here you see three examples of it. So I always thought that this mamash stimmed with what Rashi says. This seems like a little bit out of left field, I admit it. But I really think this sounds what Rashi means. When Rashi is talking about Eliezer, and when he goes to bring back Rivka for Yitzchak. Yeah? Because what does it say over there? Where's the Rashi? Vavo Hayom. Right? So this is Perek Chaf Daled, Pasuk Mem Beis. That Eliezer tells over the whole story twice, remember? He tells the whole story twice. The first time, it just tells a story. That's the narrative. But the second time, he tells Laban and Bisuel, oh, and then Avram told me, and I told him. And he goes over the whole story, just saying, and he told them the story. Right? It repeats the entire story. So Rashi doesn't ask it as a question. He just says something, right, from Chazal. Rashi writes, Amar Rabiacha, Yafe si chasan shel avdei avos lifnei hamakom. I'm adding the word more. More beautiful is the conversations of the slaves of the avos, lifnei hamakom, in front of Hashem. Mitarasan shabamin, from more than the Torah of the children. What do you mean? Why is it? How does that Rashi know that the conversations of the Avdi Avos is more beautiful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than mitzvos later on? Because Hare Parsha Shel Eliezer Kfula Batera, the Parsha of Eliezer is doubled, is stated twice. Harbe Gufa Yitera L'Ninu El Bermiza. And how many mitzvos or details of mitzvos do we only learn out from some kind of hint? Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Rashi is saying that in Kadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, what's more precious? Conversations of Eliezer Or the Torah that we were given in all the mitzvahs. The conversation of Eliezer, because the whole thing's repeated. What's that all about? So I think what it's all about is presuming Nisa. What do I mean? Because what's the conversation of Eliezer all about? That he gets love and resolve to say, oh, Mei Hashem Yatzah Dover. He gets them to say, Mei Hashem Yatzah Dover. They have nothing to say. So he showed them that this is mamish, the direct involvement of the Rebbeinu Shalom and the Ramaskim.
Are you talking about the conversation with Besuel Eliezer?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? So that's my tzushta with the Rambam, that it's the same idea, is that there's a chavivu sanis, it's more precious, is pirsume nisa, than mitzvahs. And that's what the Rambam said. In terms of our chiyuv, of what, how much we need to spend, we have to spend more money on pirsume nisa than on mitzvahs. Where do you get that from? So, I don't know what the Rambam's going to say, got it from the Medrash Rebbeinu Eliezer, but Rashi is reflecting exactly the same idea. And you know what? I think this is a little bit, maybe a little bit crazy, but just to tie it a little bit more to closer to the parsha, in last week in Vayeshev, so it says that Yosef ended up in Mitzrayim, and there's this pasuk over here that says, "Vehi Hashem es Yosef," Hashem was with Yosef, "Vehi Ish Matzliach," and he was a successful guy. "Vehi Bebeis Adin of a Mitzri," and he was in the house of his master, the Mitzri. That's the first pasuk. The next pasuk says, Vayar Adonav ki Hashem itoy, and his master saw that Hashem was with him, right? Which is what the pasuk just said. Hashem was with him, yeah. V'chol Hashem I said, Hashem asir, and everything he did, Hashem asir, and Hashem made him successful. What's the second pasuk adding? We didn't know from the first one that his master knew it. The first one is just it's true. The second one is that his master saw. But wait a minute. First of all, what does it mean his master saw? You don't see these things. What does he? What did he see? He saw his success. He doesn't see Hashem was with him. He saw his success. It should have said, Vayar Adonav es Hatzlacha so. But it doesn't say that. It says his master saw that God was with him. How does he see God's with him? A. B. Which God? The Egyptians, you know, they speak in hieroglyphics in all the bubbles, you know? So you have these pictures of all these gods. Which one means Yud Kevo? He doesn't know Hashem.
It's interesting. Just an aside, is that every
single Yud Kevo, okay, Hashem? From...
He knew who he was.
Right? No, he didn't find every...
who was.
They knew that Yosef...
That Yosef was a Hebrew.
Hebrew.
Yeah.
So you knew that. So
God was. But it's interesting.
Talk it out.
No, he was Hebrews, but he knew that he was a Jewish person.
Good. So if he's successful, who is the mitzvah going to attribute to it?
His God.
His God?
He said, and in Paris say he
no, Rashi says, Rashi Jewish. Says he's always mentioning Hashem's name.
I don't know who you're talking about. Name. Have to come back with
a look here. He's a man with God. It was between
Shane and Shane. Yeah. No, it says a different match. It says Elohim.
Right.
Elohim. It always says Elohim.
Paro's okay with. Because there's lots of them.
So Yosef always says, almost always says, Ha Elohim, with a hey.
Okay.
And but he never here, mentions Yud Kei Vav Kei, though.
But here's Yud Kei Vav Kei. And the Mitzri is going to admit to Yosef, oh, it's your God. And by the way, if he's admitting Yud Kei Vav Kei Mamish, it means the Makor of everything. That name means the one that's beyond time, the Baal Hay, not the Baal Hay, right? The Mahave Hakol. No Mitzri is molded to that. It's a funny thing to say.
Yeah, it says that until Yosef came along, you know, he was working, and then it says he did nothing but eat, right? The one was...
The master.
Right. So you think what changed?
So he saw he was successful.
Wow, well, Rashi says successful. He always says...
Hashem. Why did he say he saw that God was with him, and Yud Kei Vav Kei was with him? That's not a funny thing to say.
Is that the lesson he uses when he says, I'll interpret the dream or something? It's our dreams says, in the hands of...
But he says, Elohim and
Elohim.
Yosef never says the word.
They have lots of them. I don't think that he didn't believe that Yosef had a God, but he knew it. Everything was fine. He worshipped his God. The guy came into his house. Yeah, all of a sudden, Yosef's God is what's provided.
Okay, so
it says shame Yud Kei Vav Kei.
So that's a chiddush. That would be a chiddush. That Yosef's God that's helping him be successful. And not
that's the only thing that changed.
But that's A. B is that you'll notice this name Yud Kei Vav Kei never comes up by the Egyptians because they don't.
And Yosef himself never says it. Every single time Yosef says it, he says Elohim or Elohim. He never says Yud Kei Vav Kei.
Right. So it's a chiddush. It's a chiddush. So Rashi writes, Shem Shemayim Shagur Bafiv. He was constantly saying, oh, Baruch Hashem, Ritz Hashem, that's just Hashem. Hashem did this. So the Mitzri saw and attributed it to the God of Yosef because the way Yosef was relating to it. Yeah?
It says my basis
it because
also.
Of the way Yosef was presenting all of this, so the master began to see and was convinced that this was Yosef's God. That was making him successful.
And Beis HaSor also says that Yud Kei Vav Kei, but it never ever says Yud Kei Vav Kei again. Okay. Yosef.
Anyway, my point here is that I believe this is how Yosef lit Hanukkah candles in Mitzrayim. In other words,
and that's why Miketz always comes out on Shabbos Hanukkah too.
Okay, yeah. Right. But that's pursuing Nisa, right? That's the vort pursuing Nisa. Mm-hmm. Is it convincing the world, bringing to the world the concept that this is a Kaddish Baruch Hu? Okay, that's Chilek Aleph. So in other words, we saw the Gemara, idiosyncrasies, that we want everyone to fulfill the mitzvah. The Ani himself has to do whatever he needs to do, sell his clothes to do it. Why? Because it's Pirsumei Nisa. What's so special about Pirsumei Nisa? Well, I'll tell you one thing. Kaddish Baruch Hu thinks it's more beautiful than mitzvahs. That's what Rashi writes. And number two, and you find that Yosef was doing this, and he was convincing people in Mitzrayim about a Kaddish Baruch Hu because of that type of Pirsumei Nisa. Okay, that's number one. Number two. Everyone, there's a kasha. There's a kasha that is asked, and it's a good kasha. The nace of the Pach Shemen, what was the purpose of that nace? Why did a Kaddish Baruch Hu do that?
You could have chosen something else, not the menorah.
That's one thing. You could have chosen something else, but stay before that. Do nothing. In other words, there was a milchama. We won miraculously.
That should be enough.
That's big nace. And that's all that was necessary, because they were oppressed. They couldn't keep the religion.
10,000 men versus 100,000 or something?
Which yeah. Aspect of the nace? That was found or that it lasted 8 years?
Let's imagine there was no Pach Shemen. They never found it. There was no nace, nothing. They won the war. They came back. They'd be dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. We could have made a holiday, no?
Obviously.
What would we do? We'd say Halal V'Hodah.
No, so obviously there's something to the menorah. Yeah. Was giving teaching us something.
They ask this kasha. They say, okay, so Hashem did the miracle of Nef Pach Shemen. Maybe the Pach Shemen proved that the war was a miracle. And maybe you would have said, oh, strategy, they were fine. You know, something honestly like that. Others want to say, the nation of the Pach Shemen really wasn't necessary, but it was there because when you rededicate something from the ground up, it has to be with pure Kiddush of Atara. So they couldn't start with Tamei oil, because why not like Tamei oil? Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, right? Everyone knows Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. So Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, so light Tamei oil. You want to delay it and get pure oil? So you wait a few days, big deal. It took 8 days? 8 days. No. So you won't light it for 8 days.
Actually, Red, no, I when I read this, Aaron was insulted that he didn't get a chance to do any of the
karmas.
So Kaddish Baruch Hu, gave him the menorah. This is the
So this is the Ramban, right? Rashi says not like that. Rashi says that he was given the mitzvah of hadlakas haneros all the time because there was a constant nace that happened with the menorah that they put in the same amount of oil for every single night. And they started with the whatever menorah they started with. And that one was when the first one was lit. It was always going when all the other ones were out. Why did Hashem do that? To show the Shekhinah is always Shari B'Chlal Yisrael. And that didn't stop until Shemim Ben Shetach, after he died or something. So it was even the second base of Mikdash was happening.
It's like a part of the eagle or something?
That's Rashi Shemshat. Okay, anyway, but so there's a lot of, it's like, that's a question a lot of people ask. I want to share a different answer with you that I think is a very powerful answer. I would like to argue that there were actually two fronts to the war of Chanukah. One front was the religious oppression. And we couldn't do mitzvahs. Now, among those mitzvahs, three are pointed out in this medrash. That's not exactly a medrash, but it's a masorah we have. That there were three things: Mila, Shabbos, and Chodesh. These were three things that they particularly were goyzer against. So, I would like to argue the following. On the one hand, the Sta said, "Hichshichu einim haTorah." You're not allowed to learn. You're not allowed to do mitzvahs. That's one front of the battle. We have to have religious freedom. That's the war. But there was another battle happening simultaneously, and that was a war of Hashkafa. Let me explain that a little bit, and I think those three mitzvahs speak to it precisely.
Meaning why they focused on those
three. Yeah, it speaks to what I'm about to say. So, I'm making something up here a little bit, but you'll see why. Historically, I believe it's true. The Romans, for sure, according to Chazal, didn't come up with anything of their own. They were a carryover of the Greeks, and even in their philosophy and their gods, they were just a carryover of the Greeks. And people that know all this Greek mythology know that the Roman mythology is just different names of the same gods. It's a carryover of the same hashkafa, same philosophy, same everything. So Rome was not a new nation. They were the nation that took over and just took in everything that was Yavam. You find by Rome, by the Romans, conversations of philosophy between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva. Right? Spoke with the Siddhartha Zavani. So two of the conversations, one of them was about Bris Mila and one of them was about Shabbos. The one about Bris Mila, which of course Turnus Rufus didn't want to tell Rabbi Akiva straight up, he goes to Rabbi Akiva and he says, Rabbi, what's better, something that God makes or something that man makes? Right? That was a trick. Because of course the religious guy is going to say something that God makes is better. And then Turnus Rufus is going to turn around and he's going to say, oh, then why are you mutilating the body? God made the body and you're mutilating it. So Rabbi Akiva knew what was going on here. So he goes home and he says, quick, Rachel, challah, fresh challah. So he comes back with a freshly made challah and a couple of stalks of wheat. He says, which one do you want? Something that God made? Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Or something that man made? Okay, woman made. You know, which one do you want? Yeah? So that was his raya to him. You can't say that. That's A. B. Shabbos. So Shabbos is unbelievable. So the Kuzari, he famously writes that when you go anywhere in the world, you'll notice it's a seven-day week. And it doesn't make any sense. Because if you took out a month is because of the moon. A year is either a lunar cycle through the constellations, or easier, a solar year. The Earth goes around the sun to 365 plus days. That's it. Push it. That's what, it's a natural reality of the world. There's a month and there's a year.
Hours.
A day is, thank you. Down. Perfect. Day is 24 hours. What's a 7-day week? No, nothing, nothing. There's no way. What?
Revolution.
What?
The French Revolution, they tried to make it a 10-day week. Then.
Yeah, okay, there, right? Makes sense. Because why should it be 7?
Well, there's no mathematical number that would easily. No, I'm saying, what's the problem with that?
6 days.
Why 7?
5 days.
Why 7?
What'd you get? 5 days goes into 365 and 30.
And you have a loop here. I mean, there's no possible set of days. That
7's random. Why 7?
Yeah, so random.
The Beatles trying to
do it. Call 7. Yeah, call 7. It's going to be an 8th day.
Okay. That's something else. But so the Kuzari writes that he firmly believes it's because there was Bria in 6 days. Hashem rested on the 7th. This was a known Masorah of the world, and everybody knew it. It wasn't like the Jews started it and the Christians spread it. That's what's so fascinating. It seems to be like a 7-day
week. Yes, sir.
The Christians, as is. Both the Muslims and the Christians all agree on
but even before that, it seems like just the way it always was. It
matters that he picked that a day. Well, after Shabbos, right. Also 7
happened
days.
To be the right one, but it was 7, right? Anyway, so that's interesting. That's what Gazari says. Now, so Turner Service comes to Rabbi Kiva, and he asked him, what's his business Shabbos? What's his business Shabbos?
No business on Shabbos.
So he can work on Saturday. So he says to Rabbi Kiva, what's Shabbos different than any other day? That's the way he asks it. What's different Shabbos from any other day? So Rabbi Kiva says, what's different to you and anybody else? What makes you the general? He says, come on, Rabbi. The king told me. He made me the general. He says, no, it's the king, says Shabbos. Rabbi, come on. Cheap answer. He says, okay. Mud. It did not fall on Shabbos. It's a natural reality. Mud didn't fall on Shabbos. Rabbi, I never saw mud. Never going to see mud. Now what are you talking about? Okay, you know, Nahar Sambation, within the lost tribes, yeah? It's tumultuous, the whole bunch of us. Rabbi, never seen it, never been there, never going to be there. I don't know what you're talking about. Fine, so Rabbi Kiva says, you know how your father's grave is always smoking because he's burning in Gehenna? And he says, yeah. He says, go on Shabbos. See, there's no smoke because Gehenna closes its doors on Shabbos. So he says, okay, this I can check out. And sure enough, it wasn't smoking. So he comes back to Rabbi Kiva and he says, you chapped the day you got out of Gehenna. He's done now. He says, go back tomorrow. He goes back on Sunday, whoosh, the smoke is back. So that was the proof, the third service, that there's some sort of natural reality to Shabbos.
7-day week means a new cycle every week.
It's not, yeah, there's a Shabbos. Yeah. So, okay. So what's going on in these two cases, and how does that connect with Chodesh as well, is that the Greek philosophy was that perfection is the physical world. So whatever the gods, or whatever you want to call it, whatever they made, is what it is. You can't do anything about it. You can work with it. You can play with it. You can have fun with it. But you can't improve on it. So do it. And we argue, no. We're going to infuse it with spirituality. Ruchnias. There's another dimension you're not in touch with. And that has something to do with us. And they're like, nah. No. So that's why fighting. That's why Mila is mutilation. Shabbos. Same idea. What makes Shabbos? It's a day of the week. No. It's a spiritual day. There's Ruchnias that affects it. You'll see. It's different because of Ruchnias. I don't buy it, Rabbi. And Chodesh is the same thing. Because Chodesh, did you see the moon? You didn't see the moon. No, the Edom come, they say this on the moon, Mekudesh, Mekudesh, we sanctify it. Now it's holy. Rabbi, you didn't do anything. It's either a new month or it's not. No, because what if we push it off or they didn't see it? It's the next day, we push off the month by a day. Rabbi, come on. No, you don't understand. We impact the world through Kiddush HaChodesh. I know there's a famous Yerushalmi. It says before, a girl is 3 years old. So if her basulim is broken, however it's broken, they'll regenerate and come back. But once she turns 3, it doesn't come back. The Yerushalmi says, talk what happens if her birthday is Nisan, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and after her birthday, and it got broken, and then they, let's be Ma'abr Shana, be a leap year, now it's at her base. So she's not 3 yet, so it'll regenerate. Based on the psak of the Rabban, of the Kiddush HaChodesh, based on the Kiddush HaChodesh, is going to change the physical reality. That Yavan is not going to buy into. Okay, so now let's talk about the weather forecast. The Yavani meteorologist comes in, yeah? You're funny meteorologist. And with his hieroglyphics of omega and the gammas and whatever. So he says, jet stream, high pressure, low pressure is going to rain here, you know, not there, right? And then, you know, the rabbi elbows him out of the way. And the rabbi comes in. He says, Chevra! Chevra! If you learn Torah and do mitzvahs, it's going to rain. We say it every day in Kriya Shema, right? Right, say the Greeks. Mitzvahs aren't going to affect the physical world. You want to be religious, you know, do whatever you want. But there's nothing to it. That's the theme. So there's all of these three examples are prime examples of what they don't like about it. That it's mutilating the body, because what are you going to do about the body? When it comes to Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, there are similar ideas. Shabbos is there simply is no reality to it. And Chodesh is, what are you going to do about it? So it's three different aspects of the same basic philosophy. So here's the problem. How do you prove them wrong? You're going to go do a mitzvah that's going to change reality? So if you could, that would be a good way to do it. You know, no one's checking that three-year-old. You know what I'm saying? What?
The Rizal's able to tell you what mitzvah can
So, but I'm saying, go prove it to a Greek. Go do a miracle right now.
Tinus, remember the mother of the king said that the Jews can daven for rain. Of course, it's the rainy season. So
the Gemara has stories like
right,
that.
Right, and he says, nope, we're going to come in the Tamas or whatever it was.
Okay.
And sure enough.
So here's the kasha. So Yavan says, this is our philosophy. You go prove. You go prove us wrong. So you're right. There are these stories in the Gemara in which people seem to have done all kinds of things. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I got this one. In other words, this was a battle. This was a war. It was a war of Ashkafa. It was a war of philosophy. And how do you prove it? So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I got this one. So they found a Baruch Shemit. They lit the menorah and everyone's masking one day. And it goes longer than anybody can explain. How is it possible? What happened to the physical reality that doesn't change? The Torah says physical reality changes based on Ruchnias. That's what the Parshamin and that's what it means.
That's the source.
That's the source. That's the right. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I got this one. So it's two battle fronts. That's what I'm trying to say. Two battle fronts. There's the physical battle that we had to fight because we need to have religious freedom. But then there's the philosophical battle that we can't fight because how are you going to prove it? So you can go to the second level and you can say, so what's that all about? And I think that has to do with Torah because the Menorah represents Torah. And that's what that's all about, is because it's all about Chachma, and it's about, and you could go deeper into it in that way and say, well, it has to express itself bedafka through Torah. And Torah, the Chavos HaLevavos writes that the relationship between Teva to Torah is like a servant to its master. And that when people learn Torah and do mitzvahs, it does change the reality, and it's bedafka through the menorah, the revealed Torah, not just the secret Torah in the Aron, it's the revealed Torah that does that, and it's a bedafka in the menorah that message needs to come about. But that was the nais, because I got this one. So that's what's called Pirsume Nisa. This ties everything together. Because Pirsume Nisa means that you look at the menorah, you look at whatever the Pirsume Nisa is, and what's your conclusion? Let me ask it a little bit differently. So I got all my kinderlech together last Sunday, the first night of Hanukkah. I said, kinderlech, we're about to light the menorah. What are we doing? So everyone says, oh, we know, because of the nais, and you know, and Chashvanayim, and it lit for 8 days, and you know, it's a big nais. It's okay, so what? So they kind of stop there. Like, it was a big nice. Okay, lots of big nice then. Why are we doing this every day? Why is it so important? I don't know. So I think this is the answer. And this is really the Ramban, the end of Parshas Bo. It's a very famous Ramban. The end of Parshas Bo, the Ramban says, all of those makos were to prove something. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu was not going to...
Each mako, right, that's right.
No, in general he says that I'm not doing this again. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu kind of did a little bit again over Hanukkah. But he says, I'm not going to introduce myself to the world again. You need to know that everything that you think is so natural is not. And that's why you have Zecher Tzitzim, Zecher Tzitzim, Zecher Tzitzim. Here, Kadosh Baruch Hu felt that a point had to be made to counter the Greeks. So that's it. I don't think the Ramban addresses this over there.
No. I don't think he mentions Chanukah at all. No, he doesn't. I thought you were mentioning that Ishmael had a reason for...
Right. I'm saying, I think it's interesting that the Ramban doesn't mention it, because this is a shtickle repeat. But in any case, that we need to know... In other words, what I'm saying right now is that you could have argued incorrectly that, yeah, this was a Kadosh Baruch Hu doing a nes, but it's nothing to do with any other day of the week. But then that wouldn't be the point. The point was that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know that what we perceive as Teva is constantly impacted by Ruchnias, not just like a one-time thing. That was the Machlaikis. So the Nes and the Parshamin is supposed to teach us, like the Ramban says in the Parshas Bo, a Nes Galui teaches us about Nes and Nistar. There's not, that's the way it always works. Because Rav is always doing whatever he's doing. In fact, and I'm not going to go into this in depth now, but just telling you, because I give the shir to the women on Shabbos, so we've been doing this topic of Hashgacha Pratis versus Hashgacha Klalis. And Rav Chaim Friedlander makes the point, nobody could ever suggest that Hashgacha Klalis means that Kadosh Baruch Hu kind of like stands back and like gets involved when he needs to. Because a Kadosh Baruch Hu is mechaye everything every second. Nothing would exist if it weren't plugged in. So it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is constantly giving everything existence. If he's constantly giving everything existence, what does it mean Hashgacha Klalis? He says, you can't say that's what it means. It doesn't mean that. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is constantly, that's what it means, Nes. Kadosh Baruch Hu is constantly, constantly, every single thing that exists, Kadosh Baruch Hu is bringing it into existence every, always. That's Pirsumei Nisa. Pirsumei Nisa means getting in touch with that idea. So when Eliezer says, the love of Mesuel, the whole story, they say, Hashem Yatzadam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mamash involved. And when Yosef is trying to show, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly involved. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu proves, I got this one, I am constantly involved, now, all those philosophies are all wrong, that's what's called Pirsumei Nisa. It's fundamental to life. Because when you live this way, you know that the frustrations I went through today are because that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is my personal trainer. Whatever comes even through another person and their free will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed it because he's my personal trainer. And then whatever I went through, everything I'm going through is all communication that I have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he's my personal trainer. And it's all a result and a consequence of Pirsumei Nisa. Once you say this, then it changes everything all day long. And Chazal said, there's nothing more important than Pirsumei Nisa. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu stresses Eliezer. That's what Yosef is trying to accomplish with his lighting Hanukkah candles of his right. And that's what's going on. By Arba Kosos, maybe. That's what the Rambam says. Maybe that's where it comes from. Maybe that's the Magen Mishnah says. Maybe that's his Raya. But that's why Pirsumei Nisa, A, we want to make sure everybody does it, even the negligent people. And even the people that, I'm not going to do it if it's too much tircha. Okay, then we'll back off. You don't have to pay for damage. We want you to do it. So important for that guy? Oh, yeah. And the people are going to be so negligent about it that they're like, I won't relight it, whatever. It's so important for that guy? Oh, yeah. The honey can't even afford it. No. You got to do it. You got to do it. How much? Oh, you got to sell your clothes. You got to do it. Pursue Nisa. Pursue Nisa. So that, I think, in a nutshell, is what it's all about. That's why Pirsumei Nisa is so fundamental. That's why we have this every year. And then when we light our Neros, I think that that's a very good cheshbon to be thinking about. Is that the Neros are supposed to mean that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is constantly, constantly, constantly involved in every single aspect of our lives all the time. And that's ultimately what it means, Pirsumei Nisa.
Another story in Tanis, right? I mean, he does some water.
He lives like
that. Same God that makes oil burn, makes vinegar burn.
Right.
That's like,
there's no rules. There's no rules. No rules.
So the Makas were for who?
That's a very good question.